Draft podcast. We have finally gotten through the quarterfinals of the college football playoff. Notre Dame and Georgia was just earlier today as we record. Yesterday, as you guys are listening to this, or whenever you guys are listening to this, it was in the past. And we are going through prospects 16 through 20 today. I will be going through 15 through 20 because I have somebody who has I finally just planted the flag on him, finished up his evaluation. I'm done pretending he's not my favorite tackle in the class. So that's where we're going to get to. But we are going to talk about Notre Dame and Georgia first. Can't do that alone. I'm here with my podcast partner here, my co-host, Corey Kinnon. Corey, did anything from that game surprise you whatsoever? Because I have one. And that it is Gunnar Stockton played better than I thought he would. He's still
he's got a cannon, but like
it looks he's like athletic. It looks like he's throwing a medicine ball. Like,
it kind of does it.
His throwing motion so hurts me.
Slow, yeah.
But yeah, athletic kid. I think that he's got a decently bright, quick future because I think he's already in this was his third season. So, waiting in the wings behind Carson Beck and.
Yeah, oh, wow. I think the only thing that I was surprised about is just because Notre Dame's defense or offensive line is so young, I thought they'd be able to get after Riley Leonard a little more than they did.
Notre Dame does a really good job of getting the ball out of his hands immediately as well, so that kind of takes away the pass rush a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. But nothing down to Riley Leonard throwing for 90 yards surprised me in this game where he just was in a first-team all-crash dummy in this game. It is honestly what it was offensively for Notre Dame. That kick return to start the second half, absolutely huge.
Ended the game.
That defensive front for Notre Dame got after them like I thought they would.
Even without Mills,
yeah, it felt like every third and long third and long or fourth down situation that Georgia had to go for it, Stockton had to be like in his face. He was getting planted every third and long, fourth and whatever they needed to go for down the stretch of that game. We talked a whole lot about Notre Dame's secondary and again, Georgia's receivers are not very good, and that showed up big time in this game as well. Dylan Bell dropped a touchdown. Arian Smith. Still some shaky ball skills there as well. So it went about as well as we thought it would, but we also said we wouldn't be shocked if Notre Dame came away with the win, and they did kind of in convincing fashion.
Yeah.
I will be honest. Penn State's been playing pretty well. I mean, Penn State hasn't played a defensive front the way, and Penn State doesn't have the receivers to bang with Notre Dame's secondary either. So I think that's going to be closer in this game.
I mean, I think Penn State should win. I don't see Notre Dame's offense keeping up, but that's for
the level of physicality on. Yeah. But the level of physicality on Notre Dame's defense compared to Penn State's offense outside of Tyler Warren and Nick Singleton kind of scares me a little bit, but
yeah, I mean, they can get downhill with the run game though. That offensive line can push people around a little bit, but yeah.
But yeah, that's it. So we got our final four set, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame next week. So down to four. Yeah, we could go on a big old rabbit hole about the format again, but all four of your first four seeds getting knocked in the first round is a sure sign that your format is garbage.
Yeah, you did it wrong. Yeah. anyways, 15 through 20, I'm going to start off with my number 15 and just get him out of the way quickly. My love for Missouri right tackle, Armin Membau, is at an all-time high. I went back to him again. Nobody has a better resume as an offensive lineman this season. The gauntlet that he went through and passed with flying colors. And I know that we've kind of talked a little bit and you've gone through some of your sticking points with him. But then at the end of the day, it's like, well, he still stopped those guys. Like,
right.
He still stopped all of the best pass rushers in college football outside of Abdul Carter. So, I mean, dude, he's a great athlete. Feldman's freak list. The production is there. I love the foot speed off of the snap. I think some of the mirroring stuff is a little bit slower than you would like. But the only reason I think he's getting guard talk is because he's 6'3". Because he's got the length. It's not a length thing. And I think it is legitimately just because he is 6'3". But I love his grip strength. I love the way that he redirects and seals rush lanes at the second level in the open field. He's got really impressive patience at the second level. Doesn't get out over his skis too much. And then at the end of the day, like I said, he dominated the best pass rushers in college football. The one thing that I will say could cause him a little bit of trouble is the same thing that we have a little bit of an issue with Josh Connerly with, is just improve the core strength a little bit, mm-hmm. because the one guy who did get him a little bit was LT Overton. The one thing that I will say is the core strength isn't an issue for like wide nine guys, for like 250 pounders. It really only happened with LT when he was looping from the inside, actually. And so when I look at that as well, I look at a guy whose core strength struggles for guys who are bigger and can convert speed to power, but it's not an issue on the outside. So why am I going to move a guy who, in my opinion, his one weak point is against power to the interior? That doesn't make sense to me. And so that's why, no matter how you feel about him, a guard is not what he is.
Jamar Stewart got him on a rep too, and that's a kind of a similar situation. Where he was coming, his first step was coming out, not in pass pro, not necessarily his anchor there, but in the run game.
Yeah,
Stewart caught him out and discarded of him pretty significantly. But Membao's a fantastic. What did you think about his hands? His hands are the one thing that I kind of have a little bit of an iffy grade on of his traits.
I think the one thing for me was I saw him lose a little bit of patience with guys who like could Euro step. Guys who
strike timing as early better. As well.
Yes. Yeah. Strike timing and passivity as well. I think that he's somebody, and Cam Williams does this, but Cam Williams does this at 335 pounds and is a brick wall. But I think the passivity in pass protection against wide rushers can get him into a little bit of trouble as well. But overall, man, I love him. I love his game overall. I think he's the best just pure tackle in this class, in my opinion. And that's mostly just because I'm terrified of Josh Simmons not playing anybody. That's literally it with Josh Simmons. But yeah,
I've got a note that his grip strength. I didn't really love his grip strength either.
I did.
That's really.
Yeah, really? I did. Yeah, specifically versus arc rushers. So yeah, yep.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's where we differ a little bit, and we love that. We love that on the podcast. I also have an amendment at 15.
And we don't differ, yeah, and we don't differ. I think we normally see guys pretty similarly overall. We have a few guys that we're totally different on, and I can't wait to have those podcast episodes where we discuss those guys.
We're about to talk about one right now.
You're about to talk about him. I'm not going to, but.
Yeah, so I have an amendment at 15, too. Last episode, Cam Williams, Texas offensive tackle, was my number 15. Since then, Cam Williams is now my 16, so we'll have a little bit less to talk about, one less prospect to talk about, but I guess not because it's going to even out here. But for me, number 15 is coming in as Azurie Thomas, the corner out of Florida State. And at Florida State, yes, he's very scheme specific to playing almost exclusively press man. Very rarely is he turning his hips and running. But where I find solace in his ability to do that and his hip fluidity is that I think he's flipping his hips and mirroring release packages really, really well. It's entirely difficult to create a blind spot against him because his hips are always on a swivel. If a defensive or a wide receiver is trying to stem him one way to create leverage, he has no difficulty speed transitioning or flipping his hips back or anything like that. And I think he's just one of the, perhaps the stickiest corner in man coverage in this class. And I think that goes a long way, especially in a team And there's a lot of them out there that are just going to line up, tell their corners to line up and beat the man across from them. The Cleveland Browns are one of those teams. They tell Denzel Ward and Martin Emerson, get up in his face. I'm not telling you to rotate out. I'm not telling these safeties to rotate out. I want you to get up in this guy's face and go one-on-one with him. And I think in schemes like that, this guy's going to be a great fit. Again, not a lot of NFL buzz out there on this guy right now. He did declare early, so he's got a decent grade to come out. But the grades aren't like first-round grades out there on him. So I think some team's going to get a really big steal in Azurier Thomas. And I feel such strong conviction on that. That hip fluidity is really what tells me, like, this guy can transcend scheme a little bit. This guy can bail. This guy can speed transition at full speed on the back end. Again, the eyes are... But I didn't think he's triggering well when he in the rare cases that he's playing off man, that he's seeing things well and triggering well. So yes, right now scheme specific, but I think the traits and the tools are there where this guy can transcend just like getting up in a guy's face and playing press man, which he did 80% of the time at Florida State. I think he's going to go to the combine. He's going to test really well. I would assume is going to be a late riser. Maybe we'll start to catch on. I know there are some of us in the community that really love him. And I'm one of those guys. I'm an Azurier Thomas truther. So he leaped Cam Williams and is now my 15th player with Cam Williams falling to 16 for me.
Yeah, so I'll get to my number 16 here. My number 16 is Iowa running back Caleb Johnson. 6 foot, 225 pounds. We've talked about him ad nauseum. I don't really need to say too much about him. Some of the most beautiful feet, paws, on the football field. not gonna go Rex Ryan here. I'm not a foot guy, like, at all. Don't like people touching my feet. This is not a thing. But the second level manipulation is there, even though I think he lacks the kind of high-end home run speed that some of the other guys in this class have at a higher level. He was third in 15 plus yard runs this year, and it's because of his vision, it's because of his ability to make guys miss, it's because of his contact balance. And he's not used in the passing attack there. He's not used, he's not as good of a pass protector as any of the other top five guys in this class, but he is such a good freaking runner that he is my RB2, despite not having that complete package that all of these other guys do. That's how good of a runner, just pure runner, Caleb Johnson is. And I understand if people want to be lower on him because of the lack of receiving production and not being as good in pass protection. But for me, I really covet the ability to produce explosive plays. And only Ashton Jeanty and Corey Kiner did that better this year. So,
and he's in a 6'2", 225 frame. So, like, you get that guy in an NFL program and somebody
takes him out of
pass, bro. He's a big boy. And he moves like he's 180 pounds. Yeah. I know we usually snake this thing, but Caleb Johnson is my number 17. So I don't feel like we can talk anymore about it. Mm-hmm. So you go ahead. And who's your number 18? Then?
Well, I got to go to 17
first. Oh, yeah. Who's your 17? Yeah. Who's your 17 then?
Yeah. So my number 17 is, and he just declared earlier today or yesterday, if you're seeing this on Friday or listening to it on Friday, Alabama linebacker Jihad Campbell. A full transparency, and I've said this before, I thought Deontay Lawson was a better football player over the summer. I liked his tape more. I thought that Campbell had it all there, and the upside was there, but he had to put it all together, and I think that he did put it all together. The X-frame is something that bodybuilders would dream of having. Just natural, small waist, huge shoulders. When you see him on the football field, it very much reminds me of AJ Dillon when I saw him from the end zone view at Boston College for the first time. I was like, that dude is absolutely massive. Campbell has fantastic proportions. He's unbelievably explosive. He is very fluid. He brings versatility off the edge, and where he really took a leap this year. And I think that his eyes are still getting there. I think that they've gotten a lot better too. I think they're still getting there as a downhill player. But man, that dude's going to be able to cover almost anybody. The hip fluidity is there. We've talked about it on the podcast before, the rep against LSU where he was with Kyron Lacy in the slot in man coverage, and he mirrored him. Just an unbelievable athletic feat for somebody who was 244 pounds. He's got a little bit of everything there. I think that he has a good trigger when it comes to like matching up with tight ends, mirroring them as well. He's got a long arm, little ghost move off of the edge that I noted as well. I just don't think that he has like full edge potential in the way that I kind of think that Jalen Walker could end up with being an edge, just because I don't think that he plays with outrageous like physicality on the edge, even though he has the length and body for it. I think he is a true off-ball linebacker, and I think that he is a dangerous true off-ball linebacker. Mm-hmm. I would love it if he would somehow end up in Detroit. I think he would be an absolute glass eater for Detroit.
Him and Jack Campbell?
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk a little bit more about him a little bit later.
Okay.
My number 18. That was your number 17. We're on to 18 here. For 18 for me is Emeka Buka. I am running out of things to say about Emeka Egbuka. He's the safest player in the class. The safest player in the class. Like, if I'm looking through all of the top 17 above him, maybe Caleb Johnson. But, like, I think you could find ways where some of these guys in the top 10 don't produce at the NFL level. Shamar Stewart, Tyler Warren, tight ends are always iffy. Luther Burden for sure. Nick and Warrior could definitely like, but I get to Emeka Egbuka and I was and I can say to myself like, I don't think it matters where that guy gets drafted. He's gonna produce. Like I don't think you miss taking Emeka Egbuka. His release off the line of scrimmage. He's a fluid athlete, not overly explosive, but he's a fluid athlete. Pretty good with the ball in his hands. Like. This season they were jet motioning him and putting the football in his hands as a runner to stretch the field laterally, and he showed good patience, vision, enough initial burst to get 6-7 yards. I mean, and again, he's not going to torch you down the field, but like he's a crisp route runner. He knows how to leverage. He knows how to stack. His ball tracking is off the charts, and that's been on display of these two playoff games so far against Tennessee and against Oregon, where he caught that one against Oregon over three defenders with a hand in his face, with the hand getting on the football even. And that still found a way into his lap. You're not gonna miss on Emeka Egbuka. He's in a 6'1", 200, so he's in a great frame. Like this is a prototypical wide receiver two at the NFL level, and of the utmost dependable. Like there is no scenario that I've played through my head. Like this is the Doctor Strange endgame thing where he's like, "There's only one way." It's like this is Doctor Strange going through all the scenarios, and maybe there's one way it doesn't work. And that's maybe if he gets hit with some injuries. Like that's like it's the opposite of that situation, of the end game situation. Like he's gonna hit. And so Emeka Egbuka is 18 for me.
Yeah, he's an unbelievably safe player. He's my number 19. So we can skip my number 19. He's unbelievable. I love him, and I've loved him for a long time. I've said it before on this podcast. There was a time where I had him and Marvin Harrison Jr. neck and neck going into that final season for Marvin Harrison Jr. And obviously Emeka ended up dealing with a couple of injuries last season and wasn't quite himself, but he's just unbelievably safe, like you said. Now I'm going to go to my number 18, and my number 18 might be one of the most surprising to me because everything I do is a numerical scale. And I try to, for the most part, very much all of my weights are towards what is valuable at the NFL level. So Alfred Collins being at number 18 overall player
for me
was shocking because he cannot rush the passer to save his life. Yeah, I don't know if he has ever generated a pressure. And I don't understand it because he's got 35-inch arms. He is a good enough athlete to be a pass rusher. He's not really asked to pin his ears back. But even when he does pin his ears back, there's not a lot of success. There's not a lot of creativity there for him. And we've seen guys like Byron Murphy and even Tavondre Sweat have pass rush production in that same defense. But he might be the best natural run defender I've ever seen. Like you were talking about in your head, there's no way Emeka Egbuka is a bad football player at the NFL level. There's no way Alfred Collins isn't one of the best run defenders at the NFL level. I see him consistently throwing dudes down at the SEC level, but it's not the throwing down that makes him so impressive. When you talk about defensive tackles, a lot of guys just say, "Hey, like, are you 335 pounds? Like, is that what you are? Can you plug a gap?" And people don't understand that you need to have an instantaneous ability to process the picture that is coming at you in front of you from a foot and a half away. And you have to be able to do that instantly so you don't get out of positional leverage, so you don't get blown off of the football. He has outrageous length. He has outrageous natural strength. And he has a very quick processing trigger as well. Quick eyes. He's got an unbelievable hump move. He's able to proactively disengage and make plays around the line of scrimmage. Like, he is a play-making run defender. But my gosh, he can't rush the passer, or we would be talking about him being one of the top 10 players in this class. And so if I'm a team, it's hard to justify what is a two-down player this high. And I understand that, even though he's my 18th ranked player, I would have trouble picking him in round one. But if you believe that you can teach him to rush the passer, if you believe in the athleticism, then I think is when you take him in the top 20, 25. I think, even though I love him, I think he's going to be a really good NFL player. Like I said, from a value perspective, even though he's my 18th ranked player, probably not a first round guy, but some of the most dominating tape I've ever seen from any run defender.
I respect it. I respect it. That was number 18 for you?
Yep.
Okay. On to 19. 19 for me is Jihad Campbell, and you've talked a lot about him. Again, he does have fluidity off the edge as well. Played 100 snaps, Sam, coming off the edge. Like, that's significant for a guy who I think's best trait is on the back end and what he can do in coverage. And you hit on it a little bit, but he might be the best coverage linebacker I've ever watched. Might be the best coverage linebacker I've seen drop into coverage. And I just think he's so smart on the back end. Like, I watched a rep. I'm trying to remember what game it was. It was a Tennessee game, Alabama versus Tennessee, where he's the hook curl defender, or he's the hook defender in cover three. And he hits his landmark at 10 yards on the dot, stops on the hash. And by doing so, he carries number three vertically as the hook defender, passes it off at 10 yards on the dot, squats on the hash, sits on an incoming dig, and completely wipes out the entire concept just by understanding. And this takes a lot of film work, for one thing, to understand, like, if three is going vertical, there's a good chance there's a dig coming in behind me. Like, if three is doing this, then there's a good chance two or one are doing this. Like, that's high level stuff to do that reactionary. Like, that matters a lot on the back end. And he's a fluid athlete, explosive athlete at 6'3", 230. Like, come on. You hit on a lot of the other stuff. A firm tackler as well. Like, I don't know if I necessarily call him a thumper. Like, he's not going to light people up. But, like, he'll hit the hole, and he's going to get you to the ground. Like, he does not miss tackles. I think he missed 5% of his tackles this year at Alabama. So, like, he very much is a very sturdy linebacker. And again, I think we talked about this last week at some point, but the eyes are still a little raw. But we talked about eyes for linebackers being on, like, a bell curve. You can't be too early and you can't be too late. Like, as long as you're in that bell curve with your eyes as you're reacting and getting to the play, and you're not over-pursuing or under-pursuing, you're in a position to make the play. And I do feel like the majority of the time, Jihad Campbell's in the position to make the play. So as that kind of trigger and reactionary trigger gets a little bit quicker and gets a little bit better, he still has a lot to work on as a coverage, or not a lot. He's got a lot to work with as a coverage linebacker and has a lot of versatility as well. So, yeah, I think Jihad Campbell's fantastic, and he's 19 for me.
Yeah, and at number 20 for me is – Texas, offensive tackle, right tackle, Cameron Williams. And listen, Kelvin Banks, I had Banks in my last mock draft going like 26th or 27th, and somebody messaged me on the other app and was like, LOL, he's not going that low. I mean, he might not, but he probably should. And I know a lot of people really like Kelvin Banks, but I have a lot of questions about him as a left tackle at the NFL level. And do I have a lot of questions about Cameron Williams as a tackle at the NFL level? You're damn right I do. Yeah. But this is really where this is the point right here, where it is running backs after this and like project guys. And that's like just where we're at with this class. Williams is a project, but the outrageous length, the outrageous grip strength, the ability to redirect at 335 pounds, the frame density, the lower body explosiveness, the ability to get out on the hoof and make a difference in the run game on the edge. He doesn't get out too far out over his skis. There is just so much to like about him, aside from the fact that he is raw, that he needs more experience. And we've seen this. He's not Amarius Mims level. We both liked Mims more than Williams. Yeah. But you draft Williams with the idea that this big athletic dude who has flashed a lot of really good tape against some really good competition, some really good athletes, is going to be really freaking good when we get him in the NFL with NFL coaching and we get him in our system, learn hands in our way. Because that's something I don't think a lot of fans really understand, is that there's not one way to teach striking. There's not one way to teach where your hands go as an offensive lineman. And so if you can get him in the right system, get him with the right coaches, if he's comfortable with whatever you're teaching him, he is going to be a really freaking good offensive tackle at the NFL level.
Yeah, I agree. I've cooled on Williams a little bit. I mean, in September, October, I would have told you, if I'm taking a tackle, I'm taking this kid. Mm-hmm. And I do think he's still really green. And there was a point where it's like linear. And I kind of feel like that growth has kind of plateaued a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But again, the tools are outrageous. And we're still talking about a pretty bad tackle class at the top. So, like, if some team, but like in September, October, I would have said, like, if the Patriots had the number one overall pick, like, that's a shot that I might be worth taking. Not anymore. Like, Seahawks 15, 16, 17, 18, somewhere in that range is like the 49ers, somewhere like picking in that kind of range would be more along the lines of where I would, well, 49ers are picking a lot earlier than that now, but. We're more along the lines of where I would take him. But, like, this kid's still a first-round pick off of traits alone. He's 21 years old. He has 1 year starting experience. Like, the clay is green, but the clay is also still clay. Like, it is still very much moldable. So, and again, he's 6'5", 230, or 330. That's outrageous. So, yeah. That was 20 for you?
Mm-hmm.
20 for me. I'm going back to corner. So, I'm bookending this episode with corners. With ECU's Savon Rebel. So, obviously, Revel tore his ACL in September, and we got robbed of a full season of Revel. But I was a big fan of Revel coming into the season. Another one of those guys that's pretty scheme dependent right now, opposite of Azuri Thomas, where where he's playing press man all the time. Revel's bailing pretty much every snap, so he's opening his hips and he's bailing. But as far as long speed goes, this class, he might have the best vertical long speed of any corner in the class. At 6'3", so he's at 190, I think. So he's a long, long dude. Not a lot of opportunities to show that physicality, but I think he melts into hip pockets really well and off coverage when he's meeting receivers at their breaking point. Again, the transitional burst, when, you know, this is the Travis Hunter thing, like where Travis Hunter can be sitting still and completely pop out and burst to almost full speed. Almost immediately from a buzz look into carrying over the top. I think Revel has not a Travis Hunter level transitional burst, but like a pretty comparable level of burst to do the same thing, where it doesn't take it very long at all to get into full speed. I think his hips are fine. And I do think his ability to carry vertical makes him fit in quarters really well. I know he's playing a lot of cover three right now, but I think he can transition to quarters really well too. We've seen him carry crossers across the field, make plays on the football coming across the field. His ball skills, the ball production is notable throughout his career as well. So, and again, the NFL loves long corners right now. We're going through a stretch where the NFL loves long corners, and Savon Revel is a long corner and tons of explosiveness with translatable change of direction that isn't always evident on tape in the scheme that he's playing, which again, he's just bailing the majority of the time. So I like him a lot, man. I like him a lot.
Yeah. He's probably the one guy in this class that I'm the most pissed off about not being able to see during the All-Star cycle, because it would have been really awesome to see him in a little bit more uncomfortable situations when it comes to coverage. But we could have seen it be a Quinion Mitchell thing where he goes, he blows it up, and then he's going top 10. You know, that's very much what we could have seen with Siobhan Rebel if he would have showed out there. Unfortunately, we won't get to see that, and he still should go round one, especially in this class.
Yep. Yep, yep. So I think that's it. Again, my 15 through 20, Azariah Thomas, Florida State corner, Cam Williams, offensive tackle, Texas, Caleb Johnson, running back, Iowa, Emeka Egbuka, wide receiver, Ohio State, Jahad Campbell, linebacker, Alabama, and Siobhan Rebel, corner, East Carolina.
Yeah, and my 15 through 20 is Armon Membau, Caleb Johnson, and then we have Jahad Campbell, we have Alfred Collins, we have Emeka Egbuka, and then Cameron Williams at number 20.
I love it. I love it. We're 20 into this thing. Dalton and I have discussed we might go 30 deep before we start getting into positional rankings because it gets really nitty gritty once you get past 40, 50, because then you're watching new guys and you're like, oh, wait, this guy would be in my top 50. I'd watched him 3 weeks ago. So it gets really nitpicky. So after we get to probably 30, we're going to transition to positional rankings. And then we'll revisit at the end of the cycle our top 50s, our top 100s, and we'll go from there. But for now, I think that's – we have a firm top 20. We've got a firm top 20. So that's great. Anything else you got for us, man, before we get out of here?
Nope. I'm going to work out. Let's get it.
I love it. All right. Well, that's Dalton. This is Corey. And this has been another big board episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Enjoy.